It is true. We are witnessing the demonization of Christianity in our culture.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, put your seatbelts on, friends, and we are going to have a great broadcast today on The Line of Fire. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. Welcome to the broadcast, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884, to join the conversation today. Thursday, we were having a very focused broadcast on countering the counter-missionaries. I spent the entire 2 hours of my broadcast across all of our networks around the country going through some counter-missionary literature and refuting it point by point by point. These are from Jewish rabbis trying to turn Jewish people away from faith in Jesus, Yeshua. During the broadcast, though, during a break, I saw breaking news and was very sad to report the massacre in Oregon, the horrific taking of lives of innocent human beings in Oregon. And then on Friday, there were weather problems. You've read about the massive floods in South Carolina. We're not that far from there. There were some weather problems caused a power outage. We were unable to restore our normal connection, so we had to play a backup broadcast on Friday, a previously recorded show, which means today is the first day I can really focus on this and talk about this. And while we do not know for sure what happened in Oregon, in other words, we don't know the details, and there are some conflicting reports. What we do know is that Christianity is increasingly being demonized in our culture. We are seeing a focused attack, a hateful attack on Christians and Christian beliefs in America that may be, on this national level, may be unparalleled in our nation's history. I have a brand new article about that that's getting a lot of attention called The Demonization of Christianity. You can read it by going to our website, AskDrBrown, askdrbrown.org, and clicking on the latest article. I'm going to get into that, but I want to ask you a question. What's your experience? Forget me. Forget what I'm dealing with. Forget what's happening in national media or bashing of Christianity that is just out in the larger cultural sphere. What are you experiencing? Are you seeing in your own life, family, friends, community, business world, the circles in which you connect, social media interaction, are you seeing an increased hostility? Are you seeing increased opposition to the faith, mockery, ridicule, potential legal issues coming with? What's your experience? Are you seeing this more and more and more? I posted this question on Facebook over the weekend, and I just asked, are you seeing an increased demonization of your faith? Are you seeing increased attacks? And the answers we received, several hundred comments, overwhelmingly, yes, 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 we are seeing this. We are running into it in social media. I'm running into it in the workplace. I'm running into it from family members. In that sense, ideologically speaking, it is open season on Christians. Ideologically speaking, we are now suitable targets, at least verbally, if not more than that. And it could well be as well in Oregon that the shooter very specifically targeted Christians. Now, that is what we understand thus far, that he did. There are some who are questioning the accuracy of that. But either way, I have no question whatsoever, and I've been watching it for years, the increasing demonization of Christians as if we are the Nazis and the Ku Klux Klan because of our beliefs. So what's your experience? Give me a call if you're running into this in increasing measure, 866-34-TRUTH. We'll be right back.
Change the world. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Are you a Christian? He would ask them. And if you're a Christian, stand up. And they would stand up. And he said, good, because you're a Christian, you're going to see God in just about 1 second. And then he shot and killed them. And he kept going down the line doing this.
Now, this is what we are told happened in Oregon. The horrific shooting, another mass shooting, 9 innocent victims gunned down, and then the killer himself turning the gun on himself in the midst of police coming after him. Is it true that he targeted Christians? This is what we're hearing consistently. Here's what a pastor had to say. One of the Oregon pastors is, as these pastors and leaders have been on the front lines of reaching out to the hurting people, to a community that's in a trauma that I can't personally imagine the depth of, having never lived through anything like this close up. It's really unimaginable in many ways, and the trauma lasts for years and years and years and can be beyond that if there's not real healing and restoration in people's lives. But listen to what this one pastor had to say.
Who would have thought that there would be a death in our country on American soil because we believe in Jesus Christ and we call ourselves Christians? It shocked us that not just that they were killed, but that they were intentionally shot in the head for confessing to be a Christian. We can hardly wrap our minds and hearts around that yet. It's so raw.
Now, I understand that it's tragic either way. The terrible loss of life for any reason is tragic. Those lives cannot be brought back in this world. It's tragic, whatever the reason, whatever the cause. But if, in fact, these people were targeted as Christians, and by the way, that happened in Columbine, the Columbine massacre. That's what took place in 1999, that a high percentage of the kids who were killed were known Christians. The very first one killed was known as a Christian, was asked specifically, eyewitness confirmation from a survivor, asked specifically, do you still believe in God, before being shot in the head, Rachel Scott. So this actually has happened before on American soil. We don't know for sure about Oregon yet. We don't know for sure. There are conflicting reports. But here's what I do know. I have watched it myself for years now. Governor Mike Huckabee has talked about the criminalization of Christianity. Janet Folger wrote a book on that, the criminalization of Christianity. We're holding to the beliefs that we do. We're simply affirming biblical values by saying that we can't participate in something like a gay, quote, wedding could land us in jail or cause us to lose our business. The criminalization of Christianity. We are watching also the demonization of Christianity. I've watched it for years, like clockwork. The moment I say, you know, a kid should have a mom and a dad, that's best. You know, hey, if you believe that God designed us, it's clear he designed a man to be with a woman as opposed to a man to be with a man. If you say things like that, you're not just a bigot, you're not just a homophobe, you are Ku Klux Klan. You are Ku Klux Klan. You are a Nazi. You know how many times they get called Nazi, Ku Klux Klan? Just in the last few days. Someone wrote a review of my book, Outlasting the Gay Revolution. It's not a review. He's just a basher, basing everything on what he's thinking in his own mind as opposed to what I write. It says this is just like the writings of the Ku Klux Klan. And then probably hours after that, someone says another crazy neo-Nazi fanatic. And why? Because I say that it's best for a kid to have a mom and a dad, and that marriage is the union of a man and woman. The rhetoric is off the charts. And many people, not just social media, but people who should know better, political pundits and others, their rhetoric is off the charts. A potential presidential candidate, now Vice President Joe Biden, at a keynote address to the Human Rights Campaign just a few days ago. The world's largest gay activist organization referred to Republican presidential candidates as homophobes. You can just throw the rhetoric around, and it's not going to be surprising if unstable people now go further. Look, it happened with Family Research Council. Family Research Council, we know for a fact out of the shooter's own mouth that he targeted them because they were called a hate group by the SPLC, the Southern Poverty Law Center, which literally has blood on its hands and could have had a mass murder on its hands. Now, you say, but listen, Mike, we still don't know for sure about Oregon. Yes, but you're missing the point. Listen to what the president had to say immediately after receiving the news, before we knew any of the details. Listen to what President Obama had to say.
There's another community stunned with grief, and communities across the country forced to relieve their own anguish, and parents across the country who are scared because they know it might have been their families or their children. And of course, what's also routine is that somebody somewhere will comment and say, Obama politicized this issue. Well, this is something we should politicize individually, whether you are a Democrat or a Republican or an independent. When you decide to vote for somebody, are making a determination as to whether this cause of continuing death for innocent people should be a relevant factor in your decision.
All right, now here's the thing. He's not only immediately getting on his soapbox and talking about gun laws. And fine, have discussions about gun laws. Get into discussions about gun laws and national security checks and all kinds of things. Fine, have a healthy discussion about that. And then on the other side, gun-free zones and all. Fine, have that discussion. But we knew nothing at this point. For all we knew, this young man, this murderer, might have stolen the gun from his father. Might have been a cop, and he might have stolen the gun from his father. In other words, we don't know how he obtained the weapon or what happened at all. He could have stolen the gun from somebody else, from some criminal. We just don't know the details. And yet immediately, when the president heard that, he was getting on a soapbox. But let me take this further. What if the report had been that the kid asked, the murderer asked, stand up. He went to a creative arts class and he said, everybody stand up. And he said, what's your sexual orientation? Are you gay or are you straight? And if they said gay, he shot them. The moment that report got, if there was one eyewitness who said it, just one, and it was a little muddled, there would have been national outcry. There would have been all, and you would have gotten quotes from Christian leaders and people like me and said, it's people like them. They're inciting the hatred. They're guilty of it. There's no question there would have been national outcry. And even if you had clear evidence that that's not what happened, that myth would have perpetuated, just like the tragic murder of Matthew Shepard. You got the Matthew Shepard law, these hate crimes. Yeah, his murder was an absolute travesty, horrific, brutal, terrible, sad, sad story. But a gay journalist has pointed out that it was a myth, that it was because the one kid tried to pick up Matthew Shepard tried to pick up another kid, and the other kid was offended by it and killed him. They knew each other. Evidence was they'd slept with each other before. But the myth goes on. What if the initial reports had been that he had students stand up? It was in a world religion class. He had students stand up and asked if what their faith was. And if they said Muslim, he shot them in the head. You don't think there would have been instant outcry, Islamophobia, and look at this. We've got to change. We're terrible. What a bad culture and this and that. But the fact is, in this case, the president and others immediately talk about gun law. Okay, I understand law. But you made all kinds of assumptions because you didn't have the details yet, correct? And then if there had been some other report that he targeted gays, he targeted Muslims, there would have been an outcry immediately. Yet in this case, you had eyewitness reports coming out immediately saying that, in fact, this is what happened. He targeted Christians. All right. Now, some dispute about that from others. But let's just say we know for a fact that those reports came out quickly. And conservative news immediately began to report it. And other leaders began to talk about it. This was national news. And you had like CNN. Maybe 10, 12 hours went by before they even began to talk about that aspect. Listen, I am getting on a daily basis. I just looked at Facebook and recent posts, and a lot of them will have like the gay colors on them. Things like kill yourself, or I hope you die a slow, painful death. What the ugliest, most foul things you could ever imagine, despite the care with which we address these issues and the compassion with which they address these issues. Why? Because conservative moral beliefs, and in particular, Christian beliefs, are being demonized in the culture. I'm not whining about it. I'm not complaining about it. Right now, our heads are not being chopped off on a regular basis. Right now, we're not being burned at the stake. Right now, we're not being thrown to the lions on a regular basis here in America. But horrific things are happening to our brothers and sisters around the world. And through church history, believers have been wrongly and falsely accused of every kind of atrocity. So I do call for people to be more circumspect in their communication. I call for those on social media, weigh your words. They may just be words to you, but someone else is going to read them, get provoked by them, and perhaps do something rash. And believers, time to be bold, time to be strong, time to be unashamed. And if you're mocked for the gospel, rejoice, because the world is treating you the way it treated Jesus. But I'm telling you, friends, be sober, be vigilant. We are in an era of increasing demonization of Christianity, perhaps the worst we have seen on a national level in our country. 866-34-TRUTH. I want to come back, get some of your calls, interact on some other subjects as well that are in the news. 866-34-TRUTH is the number to call.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to the Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Are you witnessing, just in your own life, in your own experience, in your own sphere, an increasing demonization of Christianity in America? I want to go straight to the phone, starting in Fairfax, Virginia. Dan, you're on the Line of Fire.
Hey, how you doing, Mike? Good evening. Good afternoon, I should say.
Thank you.
Yeah, hey, I wanted to tell you, I've witnessed a lot of that stuff going on, especially around Fairfax, witnessing, going out. I'm a Seventh-day Adventist, and I've gone around and witnessed to people, and the hatred towards the Word of God and towards the Bible is out there, you know, and I've got chased down a few times, and, I mean, I'm not going to say that, you know, it's their fault or whatever, but I mean, it's what's going around. People are just being fed the hatred, you know. But I just want to tell my brothers out there, you know, stay strong in the Word, because the devil's out there to, you know, devour anything he can, and this is his time, because he knows that he's going to be out soon, you know.
Yeah, listen. So, first, bless you for being a bold witness and being willing to take reproach for the gospel. So in your own experience, this hatred towards God, towards the Bible, obviously that's always been there, but have you seen it increase in recent years?
Of course. Of course. I mean, you see it out here all the time. I mean, just like you were saying earlier, you know, with the Facebook, with the rainbow colors on the pages, you know, and for lesbian, and then the thing with the lady at the court. And then the Pope coming in and having the two gay guys, one of his best friends, you know, I mean, stuff like that. I mean, it's just increasing. And God said it. God said it was going to increase. You know, we it's prophetic, you know, and right now we're in the prophecies. We're at the end, you know, and the people have to wake up and read the Bible for themselves and get in the Word and realize that we're at the end, you know.
All right, hey, Dan, yeah, and wherever we are in the prophetic time calendar, whether there's 2 years ahead or 200 years ahead, the fact is we're in an increasingly hostile climate. And that's my experience. I believe there are a number of factors that have come together that have caused this. The hostility by the new atheists, the hostility that is provoked by gay activists, the hostility that's provoked by other groups that would just mock us. Again, it's always been around in different ways, but it's kind of a perfect storm right now. And then the scandals, church scandals that bring reproach, make us look like hypocrites. 866-34-TRUTH. Providence, Rhode Island. Rick, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hey, Dr. Brown, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
You and I differ on different things, but that's besides the point. You're a Christian, I'm a Christian, and you're a very educated man. I really enjoy your show. You're absolutely hitting it right on the head. You're hitting the nail right on the head. I say in the last, I'm 54 years old. I've been clean and sober since 1993, actually studying to be a pastor myself. But what's going on is in the last 8 to 10 years, we're being backed in a corner with our love. Those that really love America, love the freedom and our Christian values, We can't have a sane argument or disagreement, so to speak, without being called some type of phobia, homophobic, whatever it is. This is absolutely going on, and it's going on in a subtle way, and you hit it right on the head. It's going on not with crazy liberal leftists that are so far left that you know that they're nuts, but it's going on in the mainstream media, and it's going on with our politicians and our leaders. And I absolutely agree with you. You're hitting it right on the head, and it's scary. It's scary to be able to not be able to speak your mind in a kind and calm way and tell somebody, I believe that God says you cannot marry another man. It's quite plain and simple. It's in the Old Testament, the New Testament. I believe in dispensations. It's in the Old Testament. It's in the New, it's in the church age I live in right now. So there, even if I say it kindly, like I disagree, it's amazing how you're backed into a corner.
Yeah, I mean, there was a gay strategy that's well known and well documented to paint a certain picture of us as if we are Ku Klux Klan, Nazi, that kind of thing, simply because we disagree with gay activism. It doesn't matter what our attitude is. People would say, well, so what? You're a nice Nazi. You're a nice slave owner. You're a nice Ku Klux Klan racist. What does that mean if you're nice? That's the way we're painted. And the consequences of that are such that people actually believe it, take it seriously, and look at us irrationally in those ways, which means they could well act irrationally. Thank you for weighing in. 866-34-TRUTH in Laurel, Maryland. Ngozi, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hello. Hey, Dr. Brown.
Hey.
Yeah, I love listening to you on the radio, WAVA. And, yeah, what you're saying is 100% true. It's crazy that they're coming against Christians, pretty much like the people who created this country, like our founding fathers, and they created the Constitution and all these things, like pretty much in the fear of God and in Christ Jesus. So it's like when they're going against this, pretty much going against the beginning of this country, it's so sad. And like what they did in the Supreme Court, legalizing gay marriage, that goes against, yeah, what the guy said, the Old Testament, the New Testament. It's like they're just pretty much trying to push the Bible into a corner where if you believe in the Bible, then you're pretty much, yeah, like, as you said, a Nazi or Ku Klux Klan members. Like, nah, we believe, like, the Bible gives an A to everybody, to every human being. The Bible gives an A. Christ Jesus gives an A to everybody. But people are just so staunch on what they believe. They believe that everybody is equal. Like, there's an ACLU, and I believe in ACLJ to bring justice. So it's like they believe that everything is good. We just need to work at it, and everybody's equal. Everybody's equal, but everything is not the truth. So it's like, yeah, what they're trying to do is just goes against the nature, the spirit of America, and that needs to change. And I think even our politicians need to acknowledge and realize that even though we don't say, oh, we're a Christian nation, pretty much at the beginning we are, quote unquote, like a Christian nation.
Yeah, and found it, just because I got a break coming up, found it for sure on Christian principles. And because of those Christian principles, we were willing to do this radical, dramatic thing, this democratic process. So, yeah, without a doubt, that's what has brought us our freedom. And the Bible gives everybody an A, the A of all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. The B is believe in the Lord Jesus and you will be saved. And the C is Christ came to save sinners. I think that's how kids learned to read many years ago in America. Things have changed. Hey, thank you for the call. Friends, what a perfect time to take advantage of a terrific offer that we have. Get my new book, Outlasting the Gay Revolution, which will fill you with hope and courage and document the insanity of this society and how we can bring about long-term cultural change. When you order the book today, it's a beautiful hardcover. When you order the book today, we'll give you a free copy of my book, Can You Be Gay and Christian? So two books for the price of one, and I could not recommend them more strongly. Despite the fact that I wrote them, I can't recommend them more strongly. Take advantage of this special resource offer, 1-800-278-9978, 1-800-278-9978. Once more, that's 1-800-278-9978.
Yeah.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to The Line of Fire, your voice of moral sanity and spiritual clarity in the midst of a society in chaos in the church, all too often in compromise. I'm going to go back to the phones in a little while, but I have in studio with me a special guest, Pastor David Garcia. I had the joy of preaching for him earlier this year. We have a lot in common in terms of our heart for the Lord. He pastors a fine congregation in Florida, married to his wife now, going on 44 years in less than 2 weeks. David, welcome to The Line of Fire.
It's great to be here, Dr. Brown.
When we went out for dinner one night, when I got one of my salads, as always, we went out for dinner. You shared some of your testimony with me, which was absolutely remarkable. So we've only got about 4 minutes this segment. I know you could do it in 4 hours, but tell us who you were and how God saved you.
Well, I was born and raised in New York City. I was a Roman Catholic because all Latinos are Catholic. And what happened was I left the Catholic Church at around 15 years old. My father was a Freemason, and they kicked him out. And when I complained, they kicked me out. And then later on, I had a remarkable job working with the U.S. Department of Labor, getting people jobs in the elevator construction industry. And I had to travel to about 98 cities. In that process, God began a journey with me. By that time, I was involved in adultery. I was also involved in spiritism because my dad had taken me to a spiritist temple, and so I got demonized. Mm. But one night in a hotel room with a Gideon Bible, reading The Late Great Planet Earth, and also Hobart Freeman's The Angels of Life, God set me free, and God saved my soul.
Now how bound were you? You told me some pretty wild stories, and God sparing your life. I mean, you got in some bad places with some bad people.
Yes, I was very bound. I could never sleep. I studied the martial arts, yet I couldn't sleep without a light on. My wife she had left the Lord, but she still had a relationship with God. So she'd wake me up from nightmares. Knives would fly throughout the house in the middle of the night. And I was deeply bound by the Ouija board. And I graduated from the Ouija board to a cup. And I would tell the cup, should I have this meeting today? If it moved to the right, it was yes. If it moved to the left, it was no. But I was very, very much oppressed.
And did God ever spare your life along the way where you should have been taken out?
Yes, three times. I was in Denver at one time in Laramie Street, looking for trouble, looking really to commit adultery, and walked into a Mexican restaurant, and they don't like Puerto Ricans too much. And I, through the grace of God, God got me out of there. Another time, I was so high on marijuana, driving in Georgia near Atlanta on the wrong side of the highway, and I said, oh, God, if you would just get me home, back to the Holiday Inn, I'll serve you. Well, I got back to the Holiday Inn, but I didn't serve him.
And when God set you free, how did you know you were free?
I knew because I could sleep now. And I had an intense desire to read the Bible. So I asked the hotel if I can take the Gideon Bible home. They said yes. I called my wife. I said, I need 3 days off. She goes, you're a workaholic. You never take time off. And I asked for 3 days off and read the whole New Testament.
Really?
Yeah, and started talking to people about Jesus.
So you got saved. You got born again.
I got saved.
And that's why you don't have much of a heart for the watered-down version of Christianity that we see in America.
Absolutely not. I had asked you to come to our church to speak on hypergrace because I speak against hypergrace. I knew the sin I was in.
Yeah.
And I also know that I had to continue to walk in the grace of God, and that God didn't die for my future sins.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, our sins are paid for, but there's accountability. All right, friends, we come back. We're going to talk more about the climate, about Christianity in America. We'll take some of your calls, and I want to encourage your heart with Pastor David Garcia. We'll be right back.
Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Is Christianity being demonized in our culture? Is there increasing hatred towards the gospel? Yeah, we know that there's always been opposition to the gospel. Jesus said, if the world hates you, remember it hated me first in John 15. Paul says in 2 Timothy 3, all those who live godly lives in Christ Jesus will suffer persecution. I've often asked in America, why don't we suffer more persecution and opposition? One of my answers is because we preach a watered-down gospel. We try to avoid the offense of the cross, because of which there is less opposition. The fact is, though, there is increasing opposition, hostility. What are you experiencing? I'm going to go back to the phones shortly, 866-34-TRUTH. I'm sitting with Pastor David Garcia. He's in town with us. We'll be speaking to our students at chapel tomorrow morning. Where is your church in Florida?
It's actually about 40 minutes north of Tampa in the city of Brooksville.
And it's called?
Grace World Outreach Church.
Grace World Outreach Church. How long have you been pastoring there now?
27 years.
27 years, yeah. And folks are serious. They're going after God there. I was with them and yes, saw their hearts. David, over these years of pastoring and ministry, I don't want to be like Chicken Little and the sky's falling, because no matter what's happening around us, Jesus is Lord. God's on the throne. We are overcomers in him. Have you witnessed yourself, though, an increasing hostility towards Christian values, Christian beliefs? Is this something just in my world? What are you seeing as you're pastoring in Florida?
I see more and more opposition to Christians. I don't know if I would... I was a missionary in Zimbabwe. I don't know if I would call it outright persecution, because mm-hmm. we've not yet resisted unto blood.
Yeah.
But the criticism, truth has now become the new hate word.
Yeah.
So I consistently talk about holiness and righteousness, and I'll mention my love for gays. But as a result, I also get persecuted. I have been threatened in my church, my church, in my small city, probably 7 times to be shot.
Really?
Yes. Mainly people who were living together. The girl says, listen, you either marry me or I'm leaving, or you have to leave. And when he says, well, why is that? Well, I learned that in church, and the guy gets irate.
Seriously?
Yes.
Now, you've got a substantial congregation. About how many folks are there?
About 1,300 people.
Right. So in a smaller city, you're not in the heart of Manhattan or Brooklyn or something. So in a smaller city, that's a lot of people. Your messages get out there on internet as well. So seriously, about 7 times.
7 times.
Someone's threatened to be shot. And it's primarily because you're preaching against sin.
Yes. So absolutely.
So you've backed away from that now to save your own life, right?
Oh, no, absolutely not. One of the things, I'm very big on making disciples. We've just gone heavily into a church of small groups. I'm preparing our people. I constantly say, look, you need to be prepared to die. Look at Oregon. The guy went in there. I'm surprised even the media covered it. He said, who here's a Christian? When they stood up, he goes, I'm going to help you prepare to meet your God. And he shot them. I thank God they stood up. I would have stood up.
Yeah.
Dr. Brown, I would have stood up.
Yeah, I don't doubt that for a second. And you know what's interesting? I just talked about this in a previous segment. There's some media reports saying, well, we don't know exactly what happened, and maybe it wasn't exactly like that. I said, hang on. If there was just an inkling that he said, I want to know if you're gay or straight, and if they said gay, he shot them. If there was an inkling that might have happened, the whole nation would have been flipping out over it.
Oh, yes.
If he said, if you're a Muslim, and he shot them, and they weren't sure about the report, but there was an inkling it was true, the whole nation would have been in an uproar.
Absolutely.
But when it's Christians, well...
We're not as important.
Yeah.
We are just not as important. You're seeing even Christians against Christians now, mainline Christians. I'm opposing evangelical Christians. You're seeing more and more churches accepting the gay lesbian lifestyle. I love gays and lesbians, but they cannot be a member of my church. They need to get saved. They need to repent.
Yeah, and repenting would mean renouncing, as opposed to suddenly they become heterosexual.
Absolutely.
But they say, I recognize this is wrong. And then we're there, whoever the person is, whatever their situation, whether they're drinking, whether they're living together, whatever, there's a renouncing of what's wrong, and you turn, and then that's where the mercy, compassion of God is to meet you where you are and to help you. But over the years now, what kind of lasting fruit do you see? Are people getting depressed? Are they suicidal because you're beating them over the head with the Bible? Are they, as your church, hopeless and discouraged all the time because you're talking against sin? What kind of fruit are you seeing?
I just got a Facebook today. This Sunday, I happened to mention about the sanctity of marriage. I said, you're married. I said, somebody needs to hear this. Your wife is not a Toyota that you trade in after 100,000 miles. You go and love your wife. The guy went home, repented to his wife, and gave his life to the Lord.
Really?
Yeah, just this Sunday.
Listen, speaking the truth in love, brings about radical change. The churches that modify their stance to appease the world, those are the ones actually losing members, ultimately.
Absolutely.
On a widespread level, you might find one here that's an exception, but on a widespread level, those denominations, they're criticizing us, you're out of date, you're out of touch. Well, the gospel, in that sense, is always out of date, yes. Out of touch. The foolishness of preaching saves the world.
Absolutely. I have found that in the name of relevance, you know, people say you need to be relevant. Well, what does that mean? To me, it does not mean that I have to water down the gospel message.
Yes.
It means I should do my best to communicate in terms that the millennials or the generation that's listening to me could understand me, but I will not water down the message.
Exactly. And simple question, why does relevance equate to watering down truth? There's no connection between it whatsoever. And this is one reason we hit it off as well as we do. I mean, yes. There was that instant connection, and there's a history of people that we know,
yes.
But we share the same heart. And a lot of it is you get saved right. You get saved right. You live right. Hey, let's interact with some callers. We can do it from both of our perspectives. In Yonkers, New York, Jim, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. I called the screener just to find out more from you because I'm both of our pastors attended a seminar recently with you out at Long Island, I believe it was. And about 6 months ago, I proposed to do something on Sunday school to address the agenda that's going across our nation. Mm-hmm. And I have influence, obviously, where I'm located. I don't have a national platform. And I want our people to be informed because there's an emotional argument that we're being bombarded with and nothing to do with facts. And it's just... There isn't a spectrum that the church isn't being attacked. There isn't one facet of the church spectrum that we're not being attacked on. So it's not just about a hot button. It's all of the buttons are hot. And I could really readily agree that as a nation, we're under attack. And like the brother said, you know, nobody's taking the heat for it, except these young kids out in Oregon as our recent martyrs. But there's such a pervasive agenda out there. And you're offensive if you just absolutely love people and tell them the truth. That's offensive. It's really mind-boggling for me as a guy doing my stuff. But you had a lady on the show. My point is, you had a lady on the show whose son was homosexual, and she had just a wealth of information. How do I tap into that information? Because I'm going to do a Sunday school for 5 weeks in a row on the subject of gender identity and the homosexual response from our end.
Well, tell you what.
Help me with.
Tell you what you do. You stay right there. Betsy's going to get your info. I'm going to send you a free copy of my new book, Outlasting the Gay Revolution, and that's going to give you a ton of relevant information. So stay right there, Jim, and I want to send that to you as a gift. So, David, as a pastor, is it important to get involved with cultural issues, or is that mixing religion with politics?
No, absolutely. I teach my congregation, our public schools are now teaching gender fluidity, which means that, and parents have come to me and said, Pastor, you were right, means that they tell your fourth grader, your fifth grader, you're not just a boy, you have girl tendencies too. You're not just a girl, you have boy tendencies. We have to get involved with culture so that we can disciple our children to insulate them against these lies.
Right. So when this is happening to our kids, we don't want to, they're getting bombarded anyway.
Yes.
So hear this. Okay. We're not just talking about, we're going to, you know, preach politics from the pulpit. We're talking about things that are affecting our kids. And here kids are being taught gender fluidity. You could be both. You could go in and out of gender. Back to the phones. All right. We won't go to Charmaine. Let's go to Michael near D.C. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. How are you?
Doing well. Thank you.
Good. First of all, I'd like to thank you to God for you standing there and on your ground, that as if you're speaking your mind, speaking the natural truth, speaking the natural truth. You're talking the natural truth, because man cannot marry another man. Woman cannot marry another woman. That's the last degrading for human. This is the powerful country that was built by Christians. And,
The whole argument, and thank you, Michael, the whole argument of natural law, that things are designed for certain purposes. I'm speaking to you with my voice, not through my knee right now. God designed us. Natural law teaches us certain things for the best.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I'm sitting with Pastor David Garcia. He's the lead pastor of Grace World Outreach in Brookville, Florida. I had the joy of speaking from earlier this year. You say, I like this guy. I like the way he speaks. Well, listen, you could tune into his messages on Sunday morning, graceworldag.org. graceworldag.org. You could listen to other messages he's preached in the past. So, David, we'll be talking to someone, and they'll say, well, you have your truth, I have my truth. Now, I fly constantly, and you have to go to the right gate for the right plane, because it doesn't matter what my truth is. There's a plane leaving for a certain city from a certain place. And when I scan my ticket, if I'm not in the right place, I'm not getting on that plane.
You're not getting on the plane.
All right. That's the way it is in most everything. If you have a math test, you know, it's like, well, you have your truth, professor. I have my truth. No. 2 + 2 = 4. All right. So we've gone now from moral relativism, where morality is relative, to reality relativism, where reality is perception. Rachel Dolezal says she's black, she's black. Bruce Jenner says he's a woman, he's a woman. Yeah. So it is now reality relativism. So you're watching this just warp our culture and thinking, and it's even infiltrated the church.
Absolutely. The world no longer believes, society doesn't believe in absolutes.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line. Relativism is the belief that truth changes according to culture or the situation. Well, God's word doesn't change. I remember in college the professor saying, the only absolute is that there's absolutely no absolutes.
Uh-huh.
Nothing could be more rubbish than that.
Yes, sir.
The Bible is the absolute. Where do you establish morality unless you have absolutes? Relativism does not acknowledge absolutes. Therefore, you go by perception. And as a result, then what's truth anymore?
Yeah.
There's no more truth. There's no more moral. With moral relativism, my opinion, I don't see it that way. I don't agree with the Bible. What about other books? I don't see that passage that way.
Officer, I don't agree with the speed limit.
I don't agree with the speed limit.
I don't agree with the murder laws. I don't agree with...
So society is going to implode, and that's what's happening.
Yes.
Because of this relativistic dilemma that we have.
Exactly, because you can't function based on perception as reality. The world doesn't work like that.
They perceive evangelical Christians, pastors like me, as hate mongers.
Yeah.
Because you're going against the grain. We all don't agree with what you're saying. Well, you don't have to agree. God agrees.
Yeah.
That's the whole thing. And that is interpreted as that we're hate mongers. We're not hate mongers.
Holiness, good word or bad word?
Great word. Peter said, be holy, for I am holy. And that's what God said. It's a wonderful word. I'm not talking about legalism. I am talking about true holiness. That's walking after the heart of God, walking in purity in your motives, your actions, and your decisions.
Something beautiful about it. It's, you know what it's like? I got a bottle of water here. Picture you're outside. It's hot out. You've been doing a heavy workout. You're working hard. You come in and there's this bottle of water. It's, you know, pure from the Fiji Isle, you know, Fiji water, whatever
Fiji
it is.
Water.
Right. And you say, oh, man, do I want some water? And then you picture that. That's to me is a picture of holiness, that purity. Yeah. And it's, refreshing and life-giving, and it's good for you in that respect. You compare that to the same thing where instead someone poured mud and dirt and human waste on the inside, said, drink this. That's sin.
That's sin.
And yet, when we say holiness is good, we get called hate mongers.
That's right.
Think
Imagine
about.
That same beautiful bottle of water, and you put, well, there's just a drop of human waste in it.
Yeah.
You know, it's not going to harm.
Yeah, just floating around in there.
Who's going to drink it?
Yep. And that's sin, and that's the ugliness of sin, because we love people, we preach holiness. God's ways are good. That's why in Outlasting the Gay Revolution, I explain how gay activism has within itself the seeds of self-destruction. When you assault the foundation of marriage, when you give way to sexual anarchy, when you declare war on gender, as you say, society will implode. Let's interact with a couple more callers. We go to Boz in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Well, thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I don't know if it's true or not, but I read an article where Mike Huckabee wanted to put gays and lesbians in camps, and
that's
he's running for president.
Totally false. 100%, 100% total myth, 100% total myth. That's no closer than saying that you just called up claiming to be Elvis Presley. I mean, it is that far off. And there's no responsible person in the world who would ever say anything resembling that whatsoever about Mike Huckabee. So wherever you read it, just complete myth, nonsense. And you say, should you check on that, Dr. Brown? No, I don't need to check on that. Trust me. Trust me, I don't need to check on that. David, in the midst of craziness like that, here's someone calls in actually wondering. They heard that. Is it true? Do you have hope? That's number one. And number two, what are you seeing in terms of spiritual hunger, in terms of people coming to the Lord in the younger generation?
Well, thanks for saying that. I recently wrote a book just for... I do a lot on dating and purity.
Mm-hmm.
You want to talk about reality relativism. I believe that Christians should talk and not touch.
Mm-hmm.
Divorce begins when you're 12, when you start that dating and mating stuff. You learn how to break up. You learn how to go out with somebody. You break up with them. And therefore, when they do get married, they're unable to stay with one person. So it's crept into the church. I have actually had youth pastors and pastors tell me, you actually teach that you can abstain from fornication, that you don't touch each other? I'm sorry, that's not reality in my church. So we can't have you come in.
Wow.
It's unbelievable.
Wait. So you're, okay, you believe that when you're married, you can touch.
Yes, when you're married. But when you're dating.
Right. You don't have sex until you're married.
No.
And there are many, so you don't even kiss until you're married. But you're saying because you hold to that, the churches won't have you come in?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, I don't get asked to certain places because of my stands, but this is as basic as can be, man, that you don't fornicate if you're a Christian.
Well, they define fornication as going all the way. I define fornication as any act that leads to the sexual act.
Got it. I understand.
Heavy kissing is what married people do. Teenagers shouldn't be doing that.
Right. If you're claiming to follow Jesus. But you're saying, we only got a minute, you do have hope.
I have hope, absolutely, because of the reaction to all of the sin of our society. People are looking for absolutes, they're looking for God's word, and they're looking for it preached with love, but preached right down the line with reality.
And they're responding because they know something's wrong, because they've had it with the one-night stands.
They've had it.
And they've had it with being 16 years old and a sexually transmitted disease.
Yes.
And they know there's a better way.
Yes.
And listen, friends, you can hear from me as a radio host. Yeah, I'm involved in church life, but here's a pastor with a large congregation that's been there for almost three decades, that's shepherding people, that's telling you the gospel works. Speak the truth in love, empowered by the Spirit, and you'll see the same good fruit he is seeing. Keep standing strong, man. God bless you.
Thank you, Dr. Brown.
All right, friends, remember, you can get a copy this week only when you order my book, Outlasting the Gay Revolution, which will fill you with hope, courage, and strategy. We'll give you a free copy of Can You Be Gay and Christian? Take advantage of this. Go to the website, askdrbrown.org. My bottom line today, we're living in a culture of the increasing demonization of Christians. This calls for greater vigilance, boldness, faith, and courage. It is true. We are witnessing the demonization of Christianity in our culture.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
In a few minutes, I am going to speak with Professor Robert Oscar Lopez, a man who was very much living an out and proud gay life in the past, a man who was raised by same-sex parents, by two lesbian women, and who is really standing very strongly for the rights of children. We'll be talking to him. 866-34-TRUTH is the number to call. We've talked the first hour. We're going to continue to talk this second hour about the demonization of Christianity, the demonization of Christianity in our culture in increasing measure. While there is still dispute as to how the young people and some older people died in Oregon in the mass shooting last week, the horrific, tragic shooting, it remains tragic, the loss of life tragic, regardless of the motivation of the shooter. But if the initial accounts are accurate and these people were singled out as Christians, it points to the condition of our society today. And even if those accounts are not accurate, we know the horrific state of society today. There is no question whatsoever that there is an increased hostility towards those who hold to biblical principles, that there have been strategies to paint us as hateful, paint us as mean-spirited bigots, paint us as homophobes, paint us as Ku Klux Klan members, paint us as Nazis. It happens all the time. I run into it day and night. And in point of fact, people actually believe these things. They actually hold to them now in increasing measure. So we're going to talk about that. When I asked the question on Facebook, as I mentioned the first hour, I asked the question on Facebook, are you seeing an increasing demonization of Christianity? Just in your own circles, on social media, family, friends, workplace, several hundred comments, overwhelmingly, yes, 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 we're seeing this. And not only so, but the level of hostility, not just the widespread nature, but the level is getting more shrill, more hysterical. And I'm finding people actually believe it. You have to ask yourself a question. What would cause you to go on somebody's Facebook page, right? Go on their Facebook page. You don't know them personally at all. You're posting something that gives your name, maybe even has a picture of you, and you are wishing that person would die. You are wishing that that person would, well, here, from one, you need a kick in the head to old man, die off, and you are the reason cancer jokes still exist. And, oh, goody, another neo-Nazi crazy fanatical zealot posting their BS on my wall. What would motivate you to post those things with such vitriol? And I get them on a daily basis. I get death wishes on my Facebook page on a daily basis. And before we block those people, because that's inappropriate, if it was a Christian wishing death on gays or a Christian wishing death on Muslims, they'd be blocked. That is unacceptable for all. But we'll copy them, we'll do a screen clip, and then we'll just throw them in a file just to have. And I'm just updating it. Death wishes, more death wishes, still more death wishes. What motivates someone to feel such hatred? What motivates them to look at you? Their minds and hearts have been poisoned towards us. My next guest, Bobby Lopez, is going to give us some insight on what's happening and why he is so passionate about the needs and rights of children.
Send it, Lord. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
It is my joy to welcome to The Line of Fire Professor Robert Oscar Lopez, Associate Professor of English at Cal State University, Northridge, Los Angeles. He holds a PhD in English and Classics from SUNY Buffalo. He's published more than 100 essays on websites like American Thinker, Public Discourse, Federalist, Daily Caller, First Things, Ethica Politica, and has authored other books as well. And we'll find out about his background. Speaks French, Spanish, Italian, and Portuguese, and is competent in reading and writing Greek, Latin, and German. Bobby, it is great to have you on The Line of Fire. Thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thank you so much. I can't believe I'm actually being interviewed by Michael Brown. I talked a lot about you in my book, you know, so it was kind of interesting to be on the air with you. So
Well, it's a joy. And for our listeners, the book you're speaking of in particular?
Is Jephthah's Daughters, Innocent Casualties in the War for Family Equality. So actually, the final chapter was a response to one of your essays. And, you know, I agreed and disagreed with some parts of it, but I very much have a very deep respect for your work, and I think we agree on almost everything important. So
yeah, I appreciate it. And I have often linked your article that you put together with a team of 300 examples of why the term homofascism exists. So Bobby, your background totally different than mine in so many different respects, but it's what makes you a unique voice in this very, very important discussion, this very, very important topic. So, Bobby, tell our listeners about your upbringing and why these social, moral issues, these family issues are so important to you.
Well, my mother was gay, and she and my father basically were splitting up by the time I arrived into the world. So my mom was in a relationship with the same woman from my earliest memories until my mom died when I was 19. And so I experienced a very early form of same-sex parenting. In many ways, I would consider it maybe the best-case scenario that you can get in gay parenting, because it was a stable, low-conflict relationship between my mother and her partner. I attached very well to my mom's partner, and I didn't live through an ugly divorce. So it was kind of like the best that you could get, but I realized as I got older that even in the best-case scenario, there were so many problems and so many struggles that I had because my father was missing, and because I had developed this very strong attachment to my mom's partner, and she wasn't really my mother. You know, she had children of her own, and you can't really force a relationship like that and make it equate it to a real mother-son relationship. So I kind of watched the way that the gay community was moving as I got older, and I saw that they were moving out of some of the same-sex parenting arrangements that were benign, like, you know, let's say a widow coming out of the closet as gay and then getting help with her children from a new partner. And they were moving towards contriving these situations and even buying children. And they were getting into child trafficking and sperm donor conception and surrogacy contracts. And that was the point where I just sort of said, okay, I have to come forward and say something, you know, because nobody really was speaking to this in the discussion. What I saw was a debate between people who had a religious preoccupation, which I share, but they were really focusing on the religion part of it, and then the other side, which was just focusing on the rights of the adults. So the children were really getting lost in the debate.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. A firsthand experience, obviously it's anecdotal. You just have your own story. Right. But your own story carries weight because it is not the only one like this. It's one of many. When you hear the sociological reports and these studies that say that children of gay parents on every sociological level are just as healthy emotionally and socially, and now we've been told they're doing better than children of heterosexual parents. And because heterosexuals, like half the babies aren't planned, whereas a gay couple, they're always planned to bring a child into the world. How do you respond both on a visceral level, your personal experience, as well as looking at the research and interacting with others?
Well, you know, I did move beyond just my personal story because I knew that as an anecdote, it could not carry weight, you know, once I got into the public debate. So I did do qualitative, I would call it humanities-based research into the writings by other people who had been raised by gay parents. I interviewed a lot of them. I found them out there. So I accumulated 70 cases of same-sex parenting, and I look at those I'm not going to say that they represent the definitive, you know, example of all experiences of same-sex parenting, but I do see trends and patterns that clearly undermine or contradict what we're hearing from the sociologists. And mm-hmm. as a professor, what I can tell you is that the sociologists that are doing this study, what they do is they define everything by statistics. So they look for some scale, some number scale, and they find some value that they can measure that they know gay parenting is going to score well on. Like, for instance, you know, do you brush your teeth every morning? I'm just, you know, throwing this out as an example. Probably, you know, kids with gay parents are going to brush their teeth at the same rate as kids with straight parents. But if you were to ask a question like, do you ever wake up and long to know who the missing biological parent in your life is? Okay, then you're going to get two very different responses. So what they do is they carefully handpick what questions they ask. They usually handpick the respondents. You know, they're usually interviewing the parents or the children with the parents, and the children are almost always young. So the only studies that we have where they have given the children an independent voice and the independent ability to explain what their upbringing was like at an older age when they're independent, those studies always find very, very negative outcomes, you know, from having been raised in that environment, and they match the research that I have found. So.
And it would also match common sense that there's a role that a man plays and a role that a woman plays in the raising of a child and identity and things like that. So not having a father in your life for a good part of your upbringing, how did that affect you? Now, you knew in this case that you had an earthly father, and yet you're being raised by these two women. I imagine they cared for you very much. You said you bonded especially with the one that wasn't your biological mother.
Right.
But
right,
how did you experience the absence of a father, and how do you think it played out once you were out of the home?
Well, everyone has a mother and a father, so it's a very personal, specific thing. There is that person who you know looks like you, who gave you your physical features and who gave you your DNA, and you know that they're out there, and I knew who he was, but I just didn't have a relationship with him. And so there's a sort of half of yourself that's missing. It's kind of similar to what we would see in Cinderella stories where, you know, there's a stepchild that is, you know, raised by a step-parent and the original parent died. You know, I think that you have that longing, but then it's compounded by the fact that it really is domestic segregation because you're being raised by people who have explicitly excluded the opposite sex, including the person of the opposite sex who is your parent, and they're excluding them from the home. You don't get really any connection with, I don't know, male rituals, male insights, male bonding. All of that is missing from the home because the person raising you has made that part of their integral identity. You know, they define themselves against that. So for me as a young boy growing up, I sought to replace that, and I really looked for fatherly affection in a lot of places where you can imagine it was not healthy. You know, I was already involved in having sex with much older men when I was 13, 14, 15, and I started accepting money at a certain point for it. I didn't need the money. It wasn't an act of desperation. It was honestly just a way for me to rationalize what I was doing. And so I just didn't have control over myself until I was in my late 20s, and I think I kind of regained control of myself. And I live a healthy life now. I'm married with two children. I love my wife very much. I have reestablished ties to my dad, and so we have a healthy relationship.
So the story that you tell, I hear so commonly in terms of the absence of the father, the looking for male bonding or affection in the wrong places, and yet gay activists will say, oh, no, no, no. None of us were abused, and none of us were lacking thought. We come from great families and great relationships with our parents. I'm not saying that every case is like yours, but yours is more the rule than the exception from everything I've read and all the anecdotal evidence I've listened to. As a researcher as well, what's your take on that?
Yes, I think that part of it is we have to try to move away from the social sciences on questions like this because there's limits when we try to define everything by numbers and percentages. We just have to look at genres of stories that we see. Like, what are the patterns that you see when you talk to people who have been through this experience? And one of the patterns that I see over and over again is that there is a culture that arose, a gay and lesbian culture, that was protective and defensive of itself because they were under attack in the 1950s and 1960s and 1970s. And they learned all these coping mechanisms of how to survive in a world that was very hostile. And, you know, I'm not saying that they're innately dishonest people, but a coping mechanism was to constantly craft what other people see. to very carefully control the stories that get out of the community into the general public. And so this is one of their coping mechanisms. You know, you hide the problems, you hide your pain, you have one story and you stick to it. And so the story that they have stuck to as a community is to say, no, I was born this way. It had nothing to do with my conditioning. It had nothing to do with abuse. I am perfectly normal. Everything is totally happy. Because they don't want to be exposing any of their vulnerabilities to people, because it's a community that grew up with fear, you know, and with defensiveness. And that's why you get that reaction from them all the time. I think that generally what I see when I talk to people is that there was a huge missing male presence, and most people try to fill it with, you know, same-sex relationships.
Yeah. Let's find out, Bobby, what has happened for you saying things like that, what kind of treatment you've received.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
One of the challenges with addressing issues of gay activism is, you know, you're going to get slammed like you've never been slammed. You're going to get vilified. You are going to get mocked. You're going to get accused of every kind of thing. I imagine with my guest, Bobby Lopez, Professor Lopez, that he has, they'll drag up every kind of thing they can, every accusation they can bring against him, and drag up past life, whatever. I get accused, and, you know, I get accused, I'm a closeted homosexual. That's the constant accusation, which, you know, it's like, that's going to come your way when you address this and you're straight. Somebody posted on Facebook the other day, they said, Dr. Brown, you can't be gay, you don't dress well enough. So that's the new answer. But it gets ugly, it gets personal. You understand it's coming. And it's a reason that you have to be circumspect before you stand and speak up. But the hate, the vilification, the mockery comes your way in very degrading, ugly ways. As I mentioned earlier in this first hour, I've been getting tons of death wishes posted on my Facebook page from people who don't know me at all, simply because I say kids should have a mom and a dad, or I can't call two men joining together marriage. Bobby, what has your experience been? What reception have you gotten from the gay community for sharing your story and your perspective?
Well, it's just all out abuse. And I think this is one of the things that really has stifled the research, because the other adults, children of gay parents that I have spoken to, have received the same abuse. And unfortunately for us, the abuse that we get from the gay community sometimes mirrors some of the problems that we had with our own parents, if you know what I mean. So it's like you're reliving the same pattern, very often the same insecurities and the same stresses that caused your parents to have problematic interactions with you are widespread in the gay community. And now the whole community is looking at you as someone who's a traitor, as someone who's ungrateful, as someone who's a threat to them. And so it's full, many levels. They go after your job. That's the first thing. It's very common for gay activists to try to figure out where you work. They go online. They do research to figure out who your coworkers are, who your supervisors are. I mean, I have just been dealing with years upon years of frivolous investigations, frivolous complaints. They recruited students against me. So I know every semester I have a couple students who have signed up for the class because they're basically spying on me on behalf of some organization.
How do you know you're not being paranoid? Just to play the devil's advocate, how do you know you're not just being paranoid?
I've already had the experience of, like, the semester ends and then another semester goes by and then one of these students comes up with some kooky complaint, you know? And they got an A in the class and there's really no reason for them to complain. It's just they make stuff up. It goes on so many levels professionally to try to completely destroy your career and to destroy your professional capabilities. Then on top of it, you have, they go after your personal life. They figure out who your is close to you and your family, your friends, if there's any gay people that are in your close circle. You know, they contact them. They find ways of turning them against you and putting pressure on you. And typically what happens is often, you know, people who are close to you who are gay are under this incredible emotional pressure because they have to choose between you as an individual or this part of their identity that many times they have, you know, turned into a major important part of themselves that they don't want to diminish or, you know, or discount. So it's just constant. And I know that you and I were both on the same hate list from the Human Rights Campaign, right? We were both Yeah, so I think I was number two and you were number nine or something.
No, I was down there. I got honorary mention. Mine had been when I went to Peru and had I was invited there by congressional leaders. And so I addressed congressional leaders and university chancellors on these issues. And I actually had PowerPoint slides so they could translate them into Spanish. And then it was aired on national television. But I started my presentation by saying, I'm not here to demonize anyone. I'm not here to incite hatred towards any group. I said, in fact, gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender people, they may be some of your best friends, coworkers, family members. I said, I'm simply here to give you a report from America as to what happens when you normalize homosexual practice and redefine marriage. And that's all. It was factual. So for that, I get put on the hate list. But I know.
And you know, like, it doesn't, they put me right under Scott Lively, who actually went to Uganda and did, you know, deal with the people who eventually passed an anti-gay law in Uganda. I mean, I never did anything like that. I went to France and gave a speech, you know, in Paris, and just sort of talking about how important it is to have a mom and a dad. I mean, that just for that, you know, I'm all the way up at number two. You know, but I think you are right that it's exceptional. I think that when you take on the gay issues, you get attacked in a way that you don't get attacked, even if you're taking on abortion or immigration or affirmative action. I mean, those are really hot button issues. But with the gay issues, they really go after a very personal destruction, and they emotionally torture you. I mean, that's, I think, one of the things. And I think it comes from the fact that there's so many unresolved problems within the community, within the gay community itself. I mean, they have very high rates of anxiety and depression and suicide and eating disorders and steroid abuse and domestic violence and sexual assault. So there's a lot of rage in the community that they have been siphoning off into fighting against homophobia, which is now a kind of a diminishing thing. I mean, they can't. They're running out of homophobes. I mean, there's no homophobes left for them to fight against. And so, you know, they're just kind of running on this adrenaline. And often that's why I think when you deal with the gay issues, you get the exaggeration, the hyper-emotional responses to things, the refusal to listen to you even when you make little concessions to them. Have you noticed that? That even if you say, oh, look, I agree with civil unions, it doesn't matter. It's as if, you know what I mean, if you don't give them everything, it's as if you are, you know, calling for them to be put to death in Africa, you know?
Yeah, and so, in point of fact, the other thing I've noticed is that people actually believe the stuff. Initially, there were strategies, you know, the late 80s, well-documented strategies to categorize people like us that were this backwoods preacher saying, you know, death to homosexuals, we're the Nazis, we're the Ku Klux Klan. But that strategy has now worked, that people literally look at it. We're in a generation where people don't think critically. If it's not 140 characters or less, they can't process it. It's just these little sound bites. And when you try to reason a little further, it often breaks down right there because there's not much behind it. But the emotional attack, the level of it's ugly. Hey, we've just got a minute, but what happened when your baby was born? Did you get a lot of congratulatory notes?
Yes, it was horrible. The day that my second child was born, my son, the Human Rights Campaign sent out an email to 1.5 million people with my name and the name of my employer on it, linking to a YouTube video. And in the comments under the YouTube video, it had my work address and my work phone number and my work email. And so as my wife was going into labor, I had to deal with, you know, one of the most stressful experiences in my life, just hundreds of people flooding my employer with calls to get me fired. It was horrible.
Yeah. And this, again, a day that should have just been a carefree day of celebration with your wife,
right?
Bring your son into the world. So we come back. I want to ask you a couple more questions. One, why do you keep speaking about these things? Two, why do you refer to same-sex marriage as a social disaster? And then three, do I dare raise the question of why you equate issues of same-sex parenting, adoption of children by gays and lesbians, as a form of slavery? Did you actually say that? Is it a misquote? Well, we'll get the facts from Bobby Lopez as we come back. By the way, friends, you can get my book this week, Outlasting the Gay Revolution, must reading for this time. When you order it, we'll give you a free copy of my book, Can You Be Gay and Christian? So two books for the price of one, but take advantage of it. Call 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I am speaking with Professor Robert Oscar Lopez, Associate Professor of English at Cal State University, Northridge in California. Important recent book, Jephthah's Daughters, which deals with the consequence of children raised in same-sex households. Bobby, one thing that struck me with HRC, they've obviously got a big budget, something like $45 million they bring in every year. Their top-level executives are paid more than you and I could imagine being in teaching and ministry careers. And yet, there are not as many battles to fight on stateside now. So that's why they're going after us internationally. That's why now we've got to take the battle to the nations. I'm sure they care about these things, but also you got to raise money somehow. So as you said, there's not as many, quote, homophobes to attack. Bobby, in light of this flack, opposition, you're a married man with kids, you're a professor. Why don't you just go on kind of living your life quietly? Why do you continue to engage in these issues?
Well, you can't. Once they've got you, once you're on their hit list, I mean, you can't. I have tried several times to just sort of go and say, okay, goodbye. There were different times I took down my blog and I, you know, said, I'm just not going to deal with these things. I already made my peace. It doesn't matter. They send people after you at your job. You know, I'll get a letter from a cousin or something saying, I'm horrified that this happened and, you know, I'm going to tell everyone in the family to stop talking to you. They're going to keep on coming after you because they don't forget. If you look at the way they treated Anita Bryant, do you remember her?
Sure. Yeah.
They did not. I mean, even when people apologize to them, they just hound them till the ends of the earth. I mean, Chick-fil-A. Didn't the CEO of Chick-fil-A say that he finally?
It's basically, hey, listen, we're not getting involved in the culture wars kind of thing.
Right.
And,
yeah.
And just step back. Yeah. That doesn't stop the demonizing. You're right.
Yeah. It doesn't stop it. So I mean, you might as well, you know, side with the truth and share the truth. If they're going to come after you, I figure, you know, you can either die quietly and nobody hearing what you have to say, or you can, you know, stand up and take the arrows like Saint Sebastian, but share your viewpoint. You know, that's how I do it.
Yeah, well, I agree with you wholeheartedly, Bobby. 2 minutes before our next break, on the college campus, how rare are positions like yours, especially in California?
Well, I should say I don't speak on behalf of Cal State North, which I forgot to say that earlier. But it's so rare that you're like a unicorn. I mean, even the conservatives that you do find on California campuses are typically libertarians who are pro-gay marriage and pro-legalization of marijuana, but they like free market corporate stuff. So it's extremely rare. I mean, I don't know of anyone else on the faculty of the 4,000 people who teach here at Cal State Northridge who shares my view on this.
So, again, now maybe there's someone out there, but if they are, they're not public about it. So friends, you've got to understand how few voices there are. Once you get outside of certain conservative Christian circles, we are increasingly marginalized.
Right.
Can we win the discussion with truth? Do we need a great spiritual awakening as well? Can truth triumph over these lies, or are the lies too deeply entrenched?
I think that we can win. I think that we can win because, you know, you had asked me why I called same-sex marriage a social disaster. I mean, I do think that these changes in the laws are going to have huge repercussions that nobody anticipated because they weren't exposed to those of us who were giving them warnings. I mean, the changes to adoption and foster care and birth certificates and paternity and school curriculum and bathrooms and military billeting, I mean, everything is going to be affected by this. And immigration, that's another one that's going to be affected by it. And I think that as the effects start becoming clearer and clearer, I mean, I think that's all part of God's plan. You know, all truth is God's truth. He will reveal it when it's time for it to be revealed. But I do think that a lot of people are going to see, the negative outcomes of it. They're going to feel it, and they're going to want to correct course. So.
Yeah, and that's one of the tenets of outlasting the gay revolution, that gay activism has within itself the seeds of self-destruction. And the more victories it has, the more it will undo itself. We'll be right back.
God of light, hear our cry, send the fire. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I'm speaking with professor and author Robert Oscar Lopez. In fact, Bobby, what's your blog if people want to follow your writings directly?
Oh, yeah, I have a blog, English Maniff. It's kind of a weird spelling, but just think of Englishman and then with the word if on it, I-F as in Frank. And so it's englishmaniff.blogspot.com. You can also go to internationalchildrensrights.com. I'm the president of that institute. We have an institute with scholars from many countries fighting for the rights of children.
All right, so the rights of children, we hear about the rights of adults. We don't hear a lot about the rights of children. But you go so far as to equate the adoption of children by gays and lesbians as a form of slavery. So what do you mean by that? Those are very strong words. What do you mean by that?
Right. Well, I don't equate all forms of adoption by gay couples with slavery. There was a complicated historical argument that I published several times about the history in the United States of birthright and the fact that if you actually look at the abolitionist movement that fought against slavery in the 18th and 19th centuries, they were not driven to defy slavery largely because they opposed racism or because they opposed violence or even because they opposed hard labor. The biggest thing that concerned them was the separation of children from their parents and the reduction of human being and human life to an exchange of money. Because remember that in 1807, the importation of slaves was banned by Thomas Jefferson, but slavery continued for another 60 years because they were breeding people. You know, they had baby farms. And now, because of the demand of this community, the gay and lesbian community, to have children, even though all of them, 100% of them, cannot conceive children themselves, we now see a commerce in children being bought and sold, and that is essentially slavery. So I know that a lot of people got furious when I published those things. Obviously, you know, the activists, they watered down a very complicated argument to a little soundbite, and then they just repeated it all over the internet. But I still stand by it, that, you know, when you are buying and selling people and you're taking them away from the natural guardians who should have a connection to them, and you're reducing them to objects, and you're holding them in essentially servitude to you, even if you're emancipating them when they're 18, it's still, I mean, you have no right to this child. You know, there's really no other word that you can use to describe it. You know, maybe child trafficking, but it really mirrors a lot of the abuses that happened under slavery. Now, I don't think that children who are adopted by gay couples are being forced to do hard labor or being denied the right to read or write. But you also have to understand that during slavery, a lot of the people who were defending the slave owners, they made many of the same arguments that, you know, these slaves are part of our family and we love them and they love us and they're happy and, you know, and they'd be better off with us than, you know, homeless. You know, those are some of the arguments that often surfaced in the 19th century.
So when someone comes to you with the powerful emotional argument, here's a gay couple that adopted a handicapped child, the child was just in an orphanage. Now the child has loving parents that care for that child. And how can you say that's wrong? And how can you be critical when no one else adopted that child? Now, you may have great arguments. You may have great intellectual points. But now people are faced with, here's just a picture of these two men and their boy in a wheelchair. How do you respond to that?
Well, it's a false argument for a whole bunch of reasons. First of all, there are long waiting lists of people who want to adopt children. Many of the gay couples who are looking to adopt children are not going to adopt handicapped or disabled or special needs children. They're going and wanting to find healthy infants. And even if a child is a special needs child, even if they are missing an arm or a leg, they still deserve a mom and a dad. And that's what the entire adoption, you know, I hate to call it an industry, but what the entire adoption field is supposed to exist for is to find for the child a home in their best interest. And, you know, the argument that they often bring up is, well, would you rather have the child in an orphanage instead of in this home with two loving parents? And that choice does not really exist in real life, because what they're referring to are children in foster care who are difficult to place for a whole host of reasons. Many of those children have living parents. They're not really in the foster care system to be just immediately adopted out and be severed from their birth family. A lot of times you have to rebuild whatever connections they had with their mother and father. And in a lot of cases, it's not necessarily a good thing for them to be rushed into an adoption with a gay couple. If they stay in the foster care system, I don't oppose foster care for gay couples. So if they want to help out and give the kid a place to stay for a couple of years, the kid might really develop a lifelong relationship with them. But you're not forcing that on the child, and you're not erasing the original parents. So the likelihood of it becoming an abusive, exploitative system is very much reduced if we just look at it that way. Does that make sense, what I'm saying?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And even though you have a position, I wouldn't be for the foster care either, but even though you have a more liberal or nuanced position on that than I would, the fact is you're going to be vilified nonetheless. As you said, the concessions don't work unless you come out with full-fledged appreciation, celebration nurturance of you are a delusional bigot. Now, you are, though, an equal opportunity offender in that you have some issues with the church and the culture of divorce and what's that done to children. So weigh in on that.
Well, I'm about to leave for Paris. I'm going to be the keynote speaker at a conference at Paris on divorce. I think that divorce is hugely disastrous, and I think that Christians, I say at one point in that book that in some ways I feel like Christians deserve to lose this argument because they just didn't say anything about divorce, and they didn't want to hear from any of the children who were put through those horrible divorce proceedings in family court. I mean, almost everyone I know who lived through a divorce between their parents, I mean, the horrors of the visitation schedule and the argument and the lawyers and the judge deciding, you know, and divvying up the children in the same proceeding where they divvy up the assets, it's ugly and it's scarring and it's huge. It really dwarfs same-sex parenting. And I kind of reached a point where I was tired of hypocrisy on both sides. I was tired of the gay marriage proponents saying, well, look what they've done to divorce, and then they didn't want to do anything about divorce. And then the other side that was against gay marriage that just didn't want to talk about divorce because so many of the people who were leading the gay marriage, the fight against gay marriage, were themselves divorced. And so I just felt like nobody wanted to talk about it, and I think now we should. So,
yeah, we must. I've said for many years that no-fault heterosexual divorce in the church did more to destroy marriage than all gay activists combined. When you bring in, though, not just the assault on marriage, but where your great focus is, the assault on children, my good friend Rabbi Shmuley Boteach got really involved in family counseling, being a child of a divorced couple. And he said, here you're a kid, and now you're thrust into making peace between the two and trying to negotiate this one and that one. My wife Nancy, her mom, was married four times. My son-in-law Jimmy, his mom, was married five times. And you just talk about what wasn't there or the deficits or the challenges, or now you're living with the stepchildren, now you're living with the stepmother, and the trauma of all of it. It's a shame. It's almost a criminal shame, Bobby, that we don't talk about this more bluntly in the church. And to be totally candid with you, when we do talk about it, we primarily talk about it as a violation of the covenant between the man and the woman, a violation of the marital vows, going against teaching of Scripture, but often we don't sufficiently emphasize the impact on children. And if we're going to stand against the redefining of marriage, we better stand for the meaning of marriage. And it's so important. I'm so glad you're speaking out on this clearly.
Well, and you know, one of the things, I gave a talk at Stanford where I explained to folks that the same year that no-fault divorce began as a nationwide trend, The Brady Bunch was launched as a TV show. And in a lot of ways, The Brady Bunch was just this complete propaganda piece where tons of people were given this image of a family that was a blended family, you know, where both of them, they had a missing biological parent, and everything was all fun and games, and it was just such a wonderful thing to be living in a home with, you know, six children and who were not related to each other, and it's all kind of enchanting, you know, and charming. But that hid the reality of what was really going on during the years that The Brady Bunch was airing, which was that so many of those blended families were very difficult. I mean, there's a reason why Cinderella is one of the most widely recognized fairy tales, because that experience of being a stepchild is painful for a lot of people, and it's really hard to negotiate that. And, step-parents come in your life, they ask for love, then they keep a distance, they'll show favoritism to their own children. That's very emotionally devastating. And I know it was for me, because my father went on to other marriages as well after he split up. So even when I rebuilt my relationship with him, I had to deal with the step-siblings and the half-siblings and the, you know, the stepmothers and all that. So it was very hard.
Well, thankfully, God's intervened in your life, and with a clear head and with a new heart, you're making a real difference. Listen, we need your voice out there, and the more the opposition comes your way, just let that be a reminder you're doing the right thing, and be encouraged by it.
Right. Well, thank you. This was definitely a high point of my life, getting interviewed by Michael Brown. I really respect your work, and I remember I read A Queer Thing Happened to America. You wrote that, right?
Yes, sir.
I wrote that cover to cover. I loved the cover with the slippers.
Yeah, that was probably the most controversial part. But hey, it's a joy to have you on. I look forward to further interaction. God bless you, Bobby.
Thank you. God bless. Bye-bye.
All right.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us on The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. What a great interview with a very literate, clear-thinking Robert Oscar Lopez. His book, Jephthah's Daughters. Right, first hour, I talked a lot about demonization of Christianity, touched on it some here in the second hour. I want to switch topics completely for a moment, a 100% shift in topics here, and want to talk about some of the violence going on in Israel over the last few days, killing of Israeli citizens, including children, and or parents killed right in the presence of their children by Palestinian terrorists. And report yesterday or Saturday on BBC Watch said this: BBC News flunks headline of report on Jerusalem terror attack. BBC has long been accused, rightly so, of biased reporting against Israel, of anti-Semitic reporting. They have been rightly accused of this for years, certainly anti-Israel, if not actually anti-Semitic. And documented clearly the nature of the headlines, the way things are stated. And this is an eye-opener, friends. All I can say is it's an eye-opener. So BBC Watch reports, on the evening of October 3rd, a terror attack took place near the Lion's Gate in the Old City of Jerusalem. Two Israeli men died of their wounds Saturday night after being stabbed in Jerusalem's Old City in a terror attack, as reported by Times of Israel. The wife of one of the men is in serious condition. Their two-year-old baby was lightly wounded. The mother was taken to Hadassah Hospital. Ayn Karim is undergoing surgery. The toddler was taken to Shaare Tzedek Medical Center for treatment, where he remains in stable condition. When the attack began, the injured woman managed to run and alert a group of border police forces nearby, who arrived on the scene and shot and killed the attacker. So how did the website of the self-styled, quote, standard setter for international journalism, BBC News, how did they report the terror attack? You ready? So this is the tweet that they send out. This is the tweet they send out promoting the article. You ready? Attacker kills two in Jerusalem. Doesn't say who the attacker was. Doesn't say who the people were who were killed. So you have no idea there was a Palestinian attacking Israelis. Muslim killing Jews. The subtitle, Palestinian shot dead after Jerusalem attack kills two. So it's a Palestinian. We know he's shot dead. And there's a Jerusalem attack. It's just an attack. Doesn't say who perpetrated it. The attack kills two. That was the headline to the article. Palestinian shot dead after Jerusalem attack kills two is not only a prime example of the last first reporting regularly employed by the BBC. So you talk about the Palestinian first, right? But, of course, clearly fails to clarify to the audiences that the dead Palestinian was the terrorist who killed the two people. Later named as father of seven, Rabbi Nechemya Lavi, and father of two, Rabbi Aaron Benita. And he wounded a mother and her two-year-old son. So there were complaints. So they changed the headline. All right? And the change made it a little bit better, but still not good. They changed it a third time after complaints. And finally, after a fourth time, they got it right. Jerusalem attack, Israelis killed in Old City by Palestinians. After four efforts, four times, they finally got it right. And then, and one more. Finally, Jerusalem, Palestinian kills two Israelis in Old City. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. All right, I want to grab one more call here. Let's go to Heather in Alabama. We're short on time, but thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. I just wanted to give you my perspective. My brother was homosexual, and he came out to me in 1983. He was 19, and I was 15. And I knew when he came out that he was not comfortable at all in his skin. And we moved from the Deep South to California, and he found a community that he fit in. But, you know, he still wasn't comfortable because of the lifestyle he was in. We knew it was wrong, even though we weren't raised in a Christian home. And you can look back and see everything. Our father was gone. Our mother was overbearing, and he was molested when he was a toddler. So he had everything lined up against him on that. Mm. But my brother projected his homosexuality on every straight person that he came across. He even almost convinced my older brother that he was homosexual. And it was the lifestyle that our parents had lived in that just made it even worse. And it was so heartbreaking, and it was truly devastating to watch this. And then as I came to Christ when I was 28, to look back and see all the destruction of what divorce does to children. And yes, that has a hand in it, too. And so I just wanted to give that from my experience.
Yeah, listen, a lot of people, you know, out and proud, celebrating life, everything's wonderful. Pray, because a lot of people are in pain. A lot of people are angry at the church, but behind that anger is pain. A lot of people who say all is well, on the inside, things are not well. So thank you for calling in. Obviously, it's too late to help her brother, but there are many others we can help with the message of love and truth. God's ways are best. God's ways bring forth lasting fruit. Thank you, Heather, for calling in. I know it's a painful thing to do on your end. All right, no more time for calls, no more time for news. Let me share my heart and say, if you're a follower of the Lord, be full of faith, be full of courage, because light will shine and will outshine darkness. If you're a child of God, if you know the Lord, don't fear. God's ways triumph. Light is stronger than darkness. Love is stronger than hate. Truth is stronger than lies. So we stand firm. We stand fast. We do what's right. We love all people. We overcome evil with good. And I want to encourage you, be equipped, be informed, know the facts, have the information, not just a pep talk, but facts and truth. Understand why it is so critically important that we stand against gay activism, but that we do it with love, compassion, grace towards all. Get my book, Outlasting the Gay Revolution, where homosexual activism is really going and how to turn the tide. It's a real page turner. You'll be engaged. You'll be shocked by what you read, and yet you'll be encouraged by God's lasting principles that will triumph. When you get the book, and by the way, I was flipping through some pages as I was just praying over it, God getting it out according to his plan over the weekend, flipping through some pages, and I found it shocking, even though I compiled it and written it myself, but it'll not just shock, it'll encourage you, because God's ways will ultimately triumph. When you get the book this week, we're giving you a free copy of Can You Be Gay and Christian? So two books for the price of one. Call 1-800-278-9978, 1-800-278-9978, or go to the website, AskDrBrown.org. My bottom line today, if you care about kids, if you care about families, hold fast to marriage as God intended it, and you and your kids will be blessed.